And he looked at me out of those eyes, out of those thick glasses. And I said, "Norman, do you know who Jesus is?" He said, "Do you know who Jesus is?" I said, because people were beginning to look, I said, "Norman, did you ever think about asking Jesus to come into your heart and your life?" He never repeated me. For the first time, he said, "I've given it serious consideration."
This is Focus on the Family, and today we'll hear from Mike Atkins how, in his reaching out to his neighbor, Norman, God was actually doing a work in both his and Norman's heart. Our host is psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout. Doctor?
Well, Mike, we're coming back today for the second half of one of the most entertaining and meaningful and helpful messages that we've ever aired on Focus on the Family. It's called A Man Called Norman. Those who have followed Focus on the Family for a number of years are very familiar with this message by Mike Atkins. It goes back for us to 1984 when someone sent us a tape with this wonderful message to an audience. It was a live presentation, and it almost didn't get heard here. You know, we got a lot of tapes, and we're very conscientious about listening to them to find those that would be appropriate for our radio program. This tape first went to Bobby Valentine, who is our director of programming here at Focus on the Family. She does a wonderful job, by the way. And she put this tape into her playback machine in her automobile. And she began listening to it, and the first few minutes just didn't capture her. You know how sometimes you jump to conclusions and you decide, "I'm not really interested."
Well, I think it started off as a sermon. Mike got into it in a certain way. And it didn't sound like Focus on the Family, but that changed after a while.
Well, she reached for the knob to turn it off, and as I understand it, it broke off in her hand. And she was unable to turn it off and was forced to listen to this tape.
Almost as if the Lord was saying, "Now, wait a minute, don't do that.
This gives new meaning to what they used to say on the radio, "Don't touch that dial." You remember that? You don't remember that.
I sure do.
Anyway, Bobby listened to this tape and thought it was wonderful and sent it to me. As I recall, I had a lot of tapes backed up to listen to, and I didn't hear it for some time. But when I did, it hit me the same way. Well, the rest is history, because we've done a film with Mike Atkins on this subject. A book has come out of it. And now we return to the subject one more time, because there are a lot of people listening to us today who were not listening to us in 1984. And there are a lot of people out there still who have not seen the video or the film. So we have brought it back. We heard the first half of it last time. We're going to hear the balance today, and I think we're going to back up just a little bit to make sure that people aren't confused about what's going on in this story.
We sure will. We'll give them just enough of the story in the recap so that they'll understand what Mike is trying to say, and then we'll take it on out to the ending.
Did Bobby ever get the knob fixed on her
tape recorder? I think she sold the car and got another one. Here's Mike Atkins.
Now, we had a fellow in our town that everybody used to laugh at. Not everybody, you know what I mean, but generally, and the kids, we'd throw snowballs at him in the wintertime. He was weird. He was strange. You know, he was, a lot of people call him your town jokes. They're in every town, I notice. This fellow's name was Norman. Old Norman. He was 6'2", thereabouts, and he wore an old felt-looking hat that had so much dirt and oil in it, you couldn't tell what it looked like originally. Wore overalls that were just grease-soaked. He had old house shoes that he'd flop around town in, sometimes rubber galoshes, and they just flop when he walked up and down the street. And he'd walk real fast up and down Main Street like this, just and real fast, and then he'd stop and he'd talk to himself. I said, he'd do that all over Main Street. And people would say, "Boy, he's weird, isn't he?" He owned the house across the street from me where the bushes were growing up, and the old chocolate paint was falling off the house, and the windows were so filthy, and I didn't even think anybody lived there at first. And that day that I was out there working on my tree stump, going to fix the yard, in my coveralls, barefoot, my wife and kids had gone uptown to the grocery store or something. I'm digging around the tree stump, going to saw it out. And I look over there. He walked out of that house, and I saw that he lived there, and I said, "Oh, no." I said, "Lord, that's weird Norman over there." I said, "You had me by the house across the street from weird Norman." I said, now, Lord, I don't know exactly what's wrong. We hear a lot of rumors, but I got two daughters, and he's strange. Hey, you know, he might harm them, I thought. And so I watched him. He came down to come out to the sidewalk and go uptown or somewhere, and I said, hi, Norman. He looked at me, and he went, and took off down the street. A couple days later, I was out there working on the same tree stump. He came out again. This time, he came out to work on his lawnmower out in the backyard. Something was wrong with it. It wouldn't run. He worked with it. He looked like he was getting disgusted, and I was watching him. I thought, boy, he really is strange. And then he did something that I'll never forget for eternity. He stood up as tall as he could. He looked like the Incredible Hulk. He raised his arms. He looked at me. He glared at me, and he ran from the back of his yard where I could just see him out to the side of the house, down the side of the house, right at me, stopping at his sidewalk. Praise God, he ran at me and screamed at the top of his lungs. He went, ah! My heart was going, I had a little tool in my hand my brother-in-law made in the shop class at the high school had given it to me, and I remember saying, now, Lord, I know we're supposed to love everybody, but if he comes over here, Lord, I'm going to defend myself. He went back to the lawnmower, and he fooled around with it a little more, got angry some more, ran at me again, stopped at his sidewalk. Every time, three times he did that, three times he stopped at his sidewalk. Suddenly, the presence of the Lord settled all over me. I didn't expect it. I was surprised by it, but it settled all over me, and when it did, it seemed that faith or confidence, or I don't know the right word, more than I normally possessed, it began to well up in me, and I did something that surprised even me. I got up, barefoot, coveralls, walked across that street, and walked up to Norman in his backyard by his lawnmowers. I said, you having trouble with your lawnmower, Norman? He looked at me, and he said, you having trouble with your lawnmower, Norman? I said, I just said that. I said, I'm not much of a lawnmower mechanic, Norman. And I heard him say, I'm not much of a mechanic, Norman. As I looked at him, cleaned the spark plug, tightened a screw or two. I don't know anything about a lawnmower. And I prayed and pulled that rope, and it ran like it'd been to the repair shop. Just hummed, just. I got up and I looked at him, and he looked at that lawnmower. He looked at me, and he looked at that lawnmower, and he did something for the first time I saw when he grinned real big. I saw a green and yellow tooth right here, and I saw one over here, and one here, and one here. It'd been a busy year. I've been working at the coal mine, and I was tired, and I've been singing in churches on the weekend, and I was telling the Lord about, because my vacation was coming up, and you know what the Lord told me? He said, why don't you take Norman with you on vacation? I said, I'm going to Opryland, Lord. Norman at Opryland just... And he said, I said, Lord, I'm not going to do it now. I'm tired. And a couple of weeks later, we was going down the highway to Opryland. Norman sitting beside me, my wife and kids in the back. I noticed something about him. He was beginning to be relaxed around people. He was beginning to be less nervous, and he didn't talk to himself as much as he had before. We got to Opryland, and I didn't put him on the Wabash Cannonball, you know, because he's about 62 years old at the time, and I was afraid he might have a heart problem over that, you know. So I tried to pick out a ride he could handle, and I found the bumper cars. I said, Norman, did you ever ride in a... No. I said, here's how they work. Push the pedal, turn the wheel, and get in, and have a good time. Get in there. We got him in there, and he sat down in that big old bumper car with all them kiddies and all them girlfriends that wanted to hit their boyfriends with their car and all the mothers that wanted to hit the fathers with a car, and he got everybody in the place caught over to one side. They turned that right on. He had the whole crowd pinned, and he had his car sideways, and they had him jammed in over there, and they were mad. And he was looking around going... And looking at me going, hey, and he couldn't figure it out. We began to laugh. We were standing outside that place. Tears began to run in. But I said, look, Carver, look at old Norman. He's got him. Everyone caught over there. And the kids were like, oh. And finally, somebody got loose. And the ride was about half over. And they felt like they'd been cheated. And they were in a hurry. They came all the way around that rink. And they wanted to hit somebody before that ride was over. And there sat Norman. And they hit him full speed ahead. He went, oh. And then he really tried to get that thing going. And here comes someone else, and they were starting to get loose now in great numbers. And one by one, they'd come around and they'd hit Norman. And the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me at Opryland. And he said, that's what they've been doing to Norman all his life. People been hitting on him. They've been hitting on him. I had taken Norman an old suit of mine that I didn't wear anymore. God brought that to my attention. And I went over and looked in this closet, and I couldn't believe my eyes. Old shoes of every description you can imagine. Old suits. Sweaters that hung this way. All kinds of ties. Bolos, sparkly ties, big wide ties, little ties. Nothing that anyone would want to wear. I said, God, give me an opportunity to bless me some way, Lord. And a revival to sing at came in. And I know they gave me an offering at the end of the revival. And the Lord said, buy Norman a suit. I went downtown. I bought one of the nicest suits I could find. I made sure it cost at least more than any suit I owned in my wardrobe. And I went to get him and take him. And he picked it out. He liked it. It was kind of dark blue. He had good taste. It had a little stitching around here. It was polyester. It was nice. It was expensive. And I said, Norman, you ever been clean? He said,
it's been years. He said, he said, I'm a hermit, you know. My dad got killed in the coal mines about 50 years ago. Went to work one day. I was just a little boy, and he didn't come home. Some men came to our house and said the roof fell in on him. I remember his funeral. I saw my uncle. Haven't ever seen him again.
I said, Norman, I'm going to run some water for you in your bathtub, and I really want you to get clean, because tonight I want to take you down to a church that's having a gospel singing. Went in his bathroom, I couldn't believe my eyes. Pulled the curtain back, oh, the floor was like dirt. The tub was so filthy, I had to take all the sacks out of it first. He saved paper sacks, I didn't know why. I took them all out, and then I cleaned the tub with SOS pads, and when I turned the hot water faucet on, it fell in the tub, and I got it back up and taped it back on and got it. It leaked a little, but it worked all right. And I got his hot water ran in there, and I went in and I said, now, Norman, see, you got a new white shirt and a tie to go with your suit, and you got new shoes and socks and underclothes, and let's really get clean. I mean, you know, really, really. And I said, when you're through, holler at me, okay? He went in there in the bathroom, and I went in the living room. Look at that unbelievable house he lived in. Wallpaper sagging, rain had got in, falling off the walls and the ceiling. And dirt everywhere. He had an old coal furnace that belched smoke in the wintertime. Something was wrong with it. I don't know how he lived at night when he turned that on in the wintertime. Sometimes he didn't use it. I saw that he had several covers on his bed. He'd just crawl under, and that old mattress was like that. And I shook the curtain, and dust just came out. And I said, while he was in there in the bathtub, I heard him in there. He was in there soaping. He was beginning to say. He finally said, I'm okay. I'm ready. I'm clean. I went in there and I pulled that curtain back. I told him to get out of the tub and just put a towel around him. There he stood. His glasses were off, water dripping in the floor, and I, with a towel around him. And I looked at him, and have you ever seen mud that had just been smeared? I said, not clean enough, Norman. Why don't you get back in the tub? Now, Norman, I'm serious. Now, get clean. We want to be... And went back in the living room, looked the other way, went back in after he said he was okay. That went on time and time again. Finally, the floor was wet, the mirror was wet, the tub was wet, I was wet, he was wet. But when he got finished, I had scrubbed his head. I got him down like this. I didn't hurt him, but I got him in a headlock where he couldn't get away. I got an SOS, I got some lava soap, and I got a sponge, and I began to rub the top of his head. And I rubbed it, and he'd go, I rubbed it, and pretty soon I looked, and there was a bunch of white showing through. He had beautiful white hair. I scrubbed some more. I said, put your face up here. And he went. And I scrubbed his face, and I gave him the sponge. I said, all right, big boy, from the neck on down, it's yours. Get it clean. When we got finished, water all over the place, you could rub your thumb on him anywhere, and he'd squeak. We went downtown to the church, to the gospel singing. We sat down. People come up to me and say, well, Brother Mike, we're really glad to have you visiting here tonight. God bless you. And who's your friend? And about the time they'd get his hand, I'd say, that's Norman. And they'd go. One Sunday right after that, the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me and said, today is Norman's day. Take a Bible. Get a pastor friend. We went over to Norman's. We got the book of Romans, and we begin to tell him how we've all come short of the kingdom of God.
how he could receive salvation. At first he didn't understand, and then he grasped it. He said to me, "Oh, I see what you mean." He said, "I used to listen when I was a little boy to the radio. My mom would play that preacher was on." And he said, "You mean like my windows right there are so dirty?" And he said, "You're saying that Jesus, if I'll ask him, will clean my heart up like sometimes when I wash my windows?" And I said, "Yeah, Norm, he'll clean up inside of you and then the outside too." And he said, I would like that. And that old house with the wind blowing and cracks in the walls. Old dirty house. Norman prayed a simple prayer. And he said, "Jesus, Mike said that if I'd ask you to, you'd come into my heart. And I'd like that. Come in." And he was washed white as snow. I rejoiced. And God began to do a work in him. But God began to do a work in me. Now, folks, I'm going to tell you something. When I'm in a church that needs this message because they have a lack of love, I always mention to them that God is praised in a lot of places. Most Christians, generally speaking, love God, but not many love their neighbor as their self. I'm going to finish with this. And believe me, there's been 8 years or more now of this. It could go on all night long. I will not. I'll finish with this. I had pride in me. God still works on it. He said, "Are you willing to help Norman? No matter how long it takes. Are you willing to help him, take him places, make him a part of your life? Are you really willing?" I said, "Oh God, he's so unlovely sometimes." He said, "Are you willing to go out there in the coal shed and bring his coal in when he can't carry it anymore and put it in his old stoker-matic?" And I said, "There's no light out there, Lord, and sometimes the snow in Illinois is deep." And he had me do so many things in that house that it was beginning to be a routine, back and forth across the street. And one night he challenged me with what I want to close with. He said, in the bathroom one night, I was standing there looking at his bathroom. I had remodeled his bathroom by now, fixed his faucet, I fixed his sink, I got him some new walls, and I put him a new Celotex ceiling in and had a light I was working on. And there's one thing in that bathroom that I just would not touch. It's over in a corner, and it's dirty. I just said, "No, no." I said, "Now, God, singing a choir? I'm singing choir. I love them. I love you all the time. But I do that. Travel all the country and sing and tell them about Jesus. Okay, Lord. Not that." He kept troubling me about it. I kept telling him no, I fought that thing. I said, "No way." He said, "All I want you to do is fix that ring and lid on the top of it. You see, if you look at it," and I did, it had the two bolts that held the ring into the ceramic part. One of those bolts had broken off, and if you accidentally bumped into it, it just swung down by that one bolt and hang beside the bow. And he said, "Look over there." And I looked, and someone, and I'm going to ask him one of these days. I'm not brash towards our Father, but I'm going to ask him. I don't think he'll mind. I'm going to ask him, who put that there? In a plastic bag was a brand new ring and lid. All I had to do was take a bolt off, take the old one off, throw it away, put the new one on, put the bolts on, and it was finished, but I wasn't going to touch it. Set over in front of my television. One night, he troubled me so bad I couldn't watch television. I turned around to Carmel, my wife, and I just said, "I'm not going to do it." She was looking at the Sears catalog or something. She looked at me like, I couldn't stand it. About an hour later, I went up and got my coveralls out of the pantry, and I put them on, put the collar up. I pulled the sleeves down, found me some gloves that came down over the sleeves. She laughed and told me later, if I'd have had an operating mask like a surgeon, I'd have had that on. I got my toolbox, and I crept across the street real late, over into Norman's bathroom, got the tools out, started working on that thing. And that one bolt that was left, I just couldn't. Tried to get that box end wrench on it, just wouldn't. And if I was God, and a guy was finally willing to do something like this, I'd just have him touch that thing. It'd come right off, wouldn't you? But it wouldn't do it. And finally, I tried to get as close as I could to it without touching it. You know, Watch it. Watch it. And I tell you something, you got to hug one of them things to work on them. You know, you just... And I just couldn't get it off. And so I know we're in a church, and I'm going to trust God. He's got a good sense of humor, because here's what I finally had to do. It's true. I had to get down on that old filthy floor so I could see up under that thing. And I crawled, and I took that wrench, and I finally got it on that nut, and I moved it a little bit, and old rust and dirt just hit me right in the eye like that. I said, "This ain't the 700 Club. This ain't PTL." And I began to have one of Jim's pity parties he was talking about. And the Spirit of the Lord took care of it. He spoke to me and said, right there on the floor, he said, "When you do it unto the least of these, you do it unto me." It changed me. I didn't care if anybody noticed. I didn't want any money. I didn't want any acclamation for it. I didn't care anymore. I just began to see when it said, "I'll give my body to be burned, but if I have not love, it's for nothing." I began to understand that word, loving your neighbor as yourself. Went back home and I said, "God, what else will you have for me?" He said, "Son, get in your car and take those songs that I've given you all over the country and leave them at radio stations." I think maybe he thought, maybe I can trust him, maybe use him a little bit. And I went in the car all over the radio stations, and he opened up television, and suddenly record sales came in, and then doors opened to speak all over the country. But he never allowed any of that to happen in my life. Not the first bit of it. No matter how much I agonized with him for 35 years. No matter how much I hollered and said, "Why can't you use me, God? Why am I having to wait?" Until he had taught me to love my neighbor as myself through my friend, my neighbor named Norman. He opened the doors, and today, one of the favorite things that I get to tell around the country, if it be in Indonesia or Holland or America, is the story of how God used the old man named Norman to teach me to love my neighbor as myself.
Well, Mike Atkins wasn't the only one who learned something from that story. I would venture that hundreds of thousands of other people, since we've presented this on the air and in video form and book form, have also learned how to love others as themselves. Thanks again to Mike Atkins for the story of Norman.
Mike, that's what I appreciated so much about this story. It moved me in 1984, and it probably always will, because it illustrates so beautifully the life and teachings of Jesus. You know, it's not just a story about a man who lived across the street. It's a story about how we're to deal with the down and outer. And Jesus' ministry was often focused on those who were social outcasts. I think of the lepers of that day, the AIDS patients of this day, who were legislated against. You know, they could not walk into the village and buy things. They could not even stand and talk to so-called normal people. They had to ring a bell as they walked by, and they had to shout, "Unclean, unclean," so people could stay back away from them. They were rejected, they were despised, they were unloved. What did Jesus do? He walked right up to them, and he not only addressed them as human beings, and he not only healed them, but he touched them. Lepers that everybody was terrified of. In his own way, Mike Atkins has touched the untouchable and has made a friend of him and has introduced him to Jesus Christ in a way that certainly relates to me and my life. And if the response that this message has gotten through the years is any indication, it touched a lot of other people too.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, again, we thank Mike Atkins for allowing us to present this message one more time on Focus on the Family. What a privilege. This program is provided by Focus on the Family regularly. Our producer has been James Werning. Engineering and production were handled by Brian Cooper and John Dorick. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. Our host has been psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.